Adjunct Professor Maggie Goodlander joins me to discuss the impact of COVID-19 on upcoming elections. This is The Legal Impact, presented by the University of New Hampshire Franklin Pierce School of Law. Now accepting applications for JD graduate programs and online professional certificates. Learn more and apply at law.unh.edu. Opinions discussed are solely the opinion of the faculty or hosts and do not constitute legal advice or necessarily represent the official views of the University of New Hampshire. So, Maggie, with the recent COVID-19 crisis, we're in the midst of a presidential election cycle, which is raising many concerns over handling voting while promoting social distancing and stay-at-home orders. Has there been instances like this in the past where something like this has happened around election time?
No, I think the short answer is no. There are very few things that election officials across this country agree on, but I think it's fair to say everyone agrees that this is a truly unprecedented moment for our country, including for this upcoming election. I think in history, you know, the one example of Americans going to the polls during a pandemic was the 1918 flu pandemic. And there, you know, the lessons that I think we can draw from that, it was obviously a very different scale in 1918. Women didn't even have the right to vote in the United States. So the electorate looked very different. But what we learned from what did happen in that midterm election was that voter turnout was very, very low when presented with the choice between their health and their life in some cases and the right to vote. Many Americans had to make the difficult choice to keep their lives and health. So voter turnout was very low. And, you know, the other data point on that election is that a lot of people got sick because they did make the choice to go to the polls. So I think the upshot is we haven't seen anything quite like this. And from you know, the one example we have seen, there are some pretty important lessons to be drawn.
Bringing it to the present, Wisconsin actually held their primary a few weeks ago and raised national attention with it. How did they handle it?
So, you know, Wisconsin's April 7th election, I think is really sort of an how-to guide, both on the one hand, how to avoid having an election like that anywhere in the United States again, but also I think it really points the way for New Hampshire and other states, you know, as to what challenges we're going to have to face and really contend with in the weeks ahead. So what happened in Wisconsin, you know, there was a dispute between the governor and the state legislature over the timing of the election. And ultimately it proceeded, unlike other states that had delayed their elections by a couple of weeks and in some cases a couple of months, Wisconsin proceeded in the middle of the pandemic, in part because there was no agreement between the branches of the state government. And, you know, I think what we saw on the ground were challenges both in the in-person voting that took place on the ground. In the city of Milwaukee, for instance, there were only 5 polling places open. 175 out of 180 polling places were closed. And that's, you know, for a simple reason that most poll workers in Milwaukee, and it's the same is true across the United States, the vast majority of poll workers are over the age of 60. I think it's 58% of poll workers are over the age of 60. And 25% are over the age of 70. So this is, you know, a vulnerable group of people, and the polling places simply couldn't stay open. So that's the in-person piece. There was also an effort, a very, very valiant effort, which I think in some ways can be characterized as a success in Wisconsin, to scale up dramatically the absentee voting that took place for the election. So much like New Hampshire, in Wisconsin, historically, elections have been almost entirely conducted by same-day in-person voting. So I think in the past, Wisconsin's never had more than 10% of votes cast by absentee ballot. On April 7th, it looks like from the data we're seeing, somewhere between 70 and 80% of voters actually cast their ballot by absentee ballot. But there are just a whole host of challenges and difficulties that we saw play out in Wisconsin with respect to how those ballots were cast, which ballots were counted. But I think to the extent that there were real successes, it's really thanks to the incredible work of election administrators on the ground and also the National Guard, which was mobilized in Wisconsin to assist with the administration of the election.
Now, New Hampshire's already making plans for how they're going to handle the elections through the rest of the year. What are they looking at doing at this point?
The very good news is that, as you say, you know, New Hampshire's already started and hit the ground running. The Secretary of State and the Attorney General have issued some very promising guidance as a first step to make clear that New Hampshire voters will not have to choose between their health and their right to vote, and that any person in the state, any eligible voter in the state who wishes to vote by absentee ballot can do so by claiming a disability. So it's a little bit of not an entirely intuitive interpretation of the term disability, but I think, you know, it does work, and it's a great first step that the Attorney General and the Secretary of State have taken. But I think, you know, they'd be the first to say that there's a whole lot more work that needs to be done. On the one hand, to scale up absentee voting in New Hampshire, you know, I think in the last couple of elections, it's been less than 5% of ballots cast by absentee. So there are a whole bunch of questions about how certain statutes that would otherwise sort of narrow or complicate the absentee balloting process should be applied, whether they need to be changed, and also a whole bunch of work that'll have to be done logistically on the ground to be ready. And this all will have to happen in a very short amount of time. We have, I think, as of today, 147 days until the September 8th primary, and we're less than 200 days away from the November 3rd general election.
Yeah, I mean, this is something people don't usually keep in mind when they're figuring out reworking elections, is if you're going to be switching to absentee ballot, online voting, all these other than in-person voting solutions, is the funding, staffing, security for all these is a huge issue. And if you're going to dedicate more and more funding into these non-in-person voting options, you're taking away from facilities that will be available or materials that may be available for in-person voting.
Yeah, you know, I think it's going to be a delicate balance to figure out how to plan for. You know, we're operating in the shadow of unprecedented and extraordinary uncertainty here. We don't know what the world will look like on September 8th, and we don't know what it will look like on November 3rd. If it looks anything like it did on April 7th, then we're going to have in place plans that will allow us to have, you know, close to 100% of voters vote by mail, vote absentee by mail, but still have, and I think Wisconsin does show that you still need, no matter what, that backstop of in-person voting. And it's been exciting to see in New Hampshire, towns across the state who are, you know, attempting to carry out their local election, municipal election. So the town of Conway has experimented with drive-through voting, and we saw that in some places in Wisconsin and elsewhere around the country. This is going to require, like, you know, sort of the most extraordinary creativity from all parts of the state.
What sort of role would the federal government in these states restructuring how they handle these, especially it's not when it comes to government, this is very quick timelines that need to be put in place.
Yeah. So I think the federal government, there are at least three kind of basic ways in which the federal government's going to be really important between now and November 3rd. The first is on funding. So already the U.S. Election Assistance Commission, which is the independent federal agency charged with election administration, has been responsible for giving out grants to states through a statute that passed in 2002 called the Help America Vote Act. So there already was, before the coronavirus pandemic, a channel of federal funding that was coming into New Hampshire and other states. Last month, with the passage of the CARES Act, Congress appropriated an additional $400 million to states specifically for COVID-related contingency planning and costs. So New Hampshire is eligible to receive a little over $3 million as part of that sort of fund through the CARES Act. But it's going to be, I think, important for Congress to continue to support states as they scale up. The costs are not insignificant. So funding is one, and the two others are related. The post office, the postal service, USPS is you know, the most popular federal agency. I think I saw in a recent Pew poll, but it's also going to be a completely essential player in scaling up vote by mail for obvious reasons. But the postal service is almost out of money, and so Congress is going to have to act. We just simply can't hold an election without you know, in a pandemic scenario, without the post office. So that's going to be critical. And then the third way is related. I think we're going to see, because I would say probably over between 45 and 50 states are going to be significantly scaling up. There are five states that already allow for universal voting by mail. But, you know, pretty much every other state in the country is going to be scaling up their vote by mail operations significantly over the next couple of months. And I think it's fair to say that we're going to see a range of supply chain issues that arise from the printing of envelopes, the printing of ballots. And so I think there could be a role for the federal government to play in ensuring that election administration supply chains are operating as they should be.
Do you have anything else that you'd like to put out there as a prediction for how things might happen or changes you might see happening as we get closer to November?
Yeah, you know, I think that my prediction is that we need to be and we'll have to be ready for anything, and that this is going to require an all hands on deck kind of effort. I think the really good news and what keeps me feeling really positive about how things will develop for New Hampshire is that, you know, this is the state that's the home of the First in the Nation primary. And there is dedication on both sides of the aisle for keeping New Hampshire first in the nation. And so we've carried that responsibility, including, you know, most recently in February for the primary, just, you know, a week after a very different kind of disaster in Iowa, New Hampshire really rose to the occasion. And so I think we should consider ourselves extremely lucky that February 11th didn't look anything like today looks, and the pandemic had not yet hit us in the way that it would in just a few weeks after that. And we should consider ourselves extremely lucky that that didn't happen, and do everything that we possibly can to make sure that we're ready for both the elections that are coming up, statewide elections this fall.
Thanks for listening to The Legal Impact, presented by UNH Franklin Pierce School of Law. To help spread word about the show, please be sure to subscribe and comment on your favorite podcast platform, including Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify.